Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October skies.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you again today. And, you know, I always look forward to putting the show together and hanging out with all you. It's always a great experience, and of course, you know, we've seen so far during the week, we saw Apple's earnings. We see more bad data, but then of course we see China bringing in more quantitative easing. We see the Chinese stocks blowing up to the moon. You know, I don't know, is it a bubble? You know, there's always a debate on how you determine if it's a bubble. And no expert, well, I'm an expert, I guess, I say it's a bubble. You know, nobody wants to try to predict a bubble. And I'm not saying that I know when the bubble is going to pop, but I know certainly it's a bubble. And what are some of the key things you look at when you see a bubble? Well, we've got margin debts at record highs. Margin debts. Now, what does that mean? Margin debt is people borrowing money to buy more stock. So is the market going up now still because of the chase for yield, or is the market going up now because of greed? Now, I don't have the direct answer for that today, but I would say that the market is going up more for greed now, more for people who think that they missed the opportunity versus the actual still the continued chase for yield. Because I think a lot of the people that chased yield are in, you know, the dividend paying stocks. But when you start to see stocks, even Amazon, now we can call Amazon a staple. Amazon goes up $56 on earnings, 14%. You've got the Chinese stocks, you know, Baidu before earnings popped $18, Baba popping, Sina back over $40, you know, up 14, actually Sina's up 30%. So, you know, you're getting this overinflated buying. You're having these massive moves into your trade, and you're seeing it continue to go wildly crazy to the upside. Now, we believe that there's still going to be the NASDAQ will still print that all-time high, but the way it's been trading recently, it could be a little bit weak. But I think more importantly, if we look into fundamentals, and we're not fundamental traders here, and I'm not telling you that you should be on the fundamentals, and nor would I recommend trading off of them. But let's take an accounting, okay? First of all, we have, stocks, although the markets are either at or near new highs, over 50% of the stocks are below their 50-day moving average. Now, if we look at the economic data, durable goods failing, they get a failing grade. New home sales failing, they get a failing grade. PMI down, that's a failing grade. Dallas Fed, 6 consecutive months of bad news. Earnings, not anywhere near what you would think and expect for growth in an economy. So what does it mean? Well, it means that's why we always say right here on the Bubba Show that data means nothing. Because right now, all we care about is that the Fed is going to continue to bring in money. Now, you know, you can look at this, it's very perverse that you have people actually cheering for the markets to go to stay in trouble. And of course, why wouldn't you if you were in the position of having free money access? and you could continue to get money cheap, why wouldn't you want to have the markets to continue to struggle with bad news? Because all you're really seeing is a market that continues to jump higher based on the fact that there is going to be more bad news. Now, you know, you could say, well, you know, it's okay. And it is okay. You know why? Because it is what it is. It's absolute. But I think it's really funny is that the pundits, and that's another sign of a bubble, is the pundits are blind to the facts that we aren't seeing growth. The pundits are blind to the fact, they refuse to admit the fact that the economy is not very good. They refuse to come out. Why? Because people don't want to hear that news. Because when your portfolio is growing up every day, you want to be happy about it. And I am not predicting that the market ends, that the top is in, and that we go lower. But you're starting to see a little bit of weakness in certain spots. And again, you cannot time this down to a science. This is why the badge and I always talk about, you know, we don't worry about it because our long-term portfolios are hedged out. In other words, I'm actually hoping for a market meltdown. A, because I think it would be healthier for the market. B, because I think it would bring back some volatility, which is always better to trade with. And C, so I can buy more. You see? Now, as negative as I happen to be about the overall markets now, I'm not negative 20 years from now. I might not be negative 5 years from now. What I really want to see is I want to see growth. I want to see the America become the America that we know. And I want to get away from this funky crap they call quantitative easing. However, and unfortunately, I believe that there's a fair chance that there could be another quantitative easing program around the corner. Because we are seeing the struggles. Look at the GDP number. I mean, are you kidding me? But of course, we know why, right? It's the weather. It's Easter. It's whatever. And that is what I find more troubling than anything else, is why do we have to have an excuse? When did we become the society of excuse makers? Okay? You know, just a funny story. I have a kid that works for me, and, you know, I'd given him a number of projects, and I said, okay, do this, this, and this. And he said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I talked to him, and he said, yeah, it's done. I said, well, let me see it. I can't transfer the data. I have to show it to you. And I'm going, come on, let me see it. And I get this. I keep getting the story. Of course, I know, right? What do I know? I know that the job ain't done, and he's trying to buy time. And I have found in my life that the more you try to buy time or stall off any type of situation, the more you're going to find yourself in a deep hole. Because the truth always has a way of finding it out, of finding its way to the surface. And when you don't fess up, for example, like we right now, like in our economy right now, and we're not saying where we are, I think you'll find out that the pain and punishment we will suffer will be much greater the longer we try to ignore the problems. You know, it is, again, I love to compare it to kids because, you know, when you do something wrong as a kid, you hide and hope that nobody finds out. Well, now we've got big kids, adults, the president, everybody hiding from what's going on. And that, to me, becomes a problem. But what's not a problem is our second edition of the Bubble Report is coming out this week. And I really want you to be part of it. I think it's a great report. I think you'll love it. I think you'll enjoy the writing of Scott Chalady, Keith Bliss, the Badger, myself, and the rest of the crew, Mike Brown, because you will find that you'll get a perspective on markets. But in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Check out thebubbashow.org and get signed up for The Bubba Report. We're going to step out for a break and come back with Bill Whittle right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And You know, we're seeing a lot of action going on, but I wanted to share some more of our friend, Mr. Bill Whittle. Let's go back and listen to some of Mr. Bill Whittle.
Everybody, I like to get this a little closer to me in case I decide to pick up a little religion tonight. Give me a chance to take a step back so I can hear how loud I'm actually being. It's a pleasure to be back up here. You know, last time I was up here, I didn't realize how close I actually was to Berkeley, and this time I did, and I was somewhat surprised that my skin didn't burst into flames, but apparently I'm just a degree or two warmer than I would be otherwise, and it's actually great to be up here. We have a large problem ahead of us. Many times when we talk about problems out there in the real world, we talk about the problems of demographics. We talk about the problems of demographics in terms of the West disappearing, just demographically disappearing. And we certainly have a problem as conservatives in terms of the demographics of the country. Ever since things like civics and history were removed from high schools, history as we know it today anyway, we face the fact that younger and younger and younger people are becoming more and more left-wing. It's not an accident that they're not taught about our founding principles, because if they were, they wouldn't be so left-wing. But they're not taught about them, and so they are becoming more left-wing. And what we see when we look out at conservatism today is we see a group that seems to be getting older. This particular room isn't too bad, but I've been at Tea Party events where I've looked out in the crowd and the average age is, you know, deceased. And that's a problem. That's a serious problem. So in order to understand that problem, in order to do something about that problem, and in order to start making some traction with young people who are, in fact, actually extremely conservative, we have to be able to understand something. We have to understand this in our bones, and we are very reluctant to understand this in our bones. We have to understand that people don't vote the way they think. They vote the way they feel. And this is true for all of us, and that's not a bad thing. I know a lot of people look down on that, but our feelings are our core emotions. These are our core values. Feelings are what really drives our personalities. And if people vote the way they feel, and they feel bad about conservatives, then they're going to vote for liberals just because they don't like us. And that's really the simplicity of the problem we find ourselves in today. We don't get the votes because we're perceived as being the villains. I'll give you a very interesting example. Exit polling after the election of Mitt Romney. Exit polling, not forecasting or models, people coming out of voting booths after the election of 2012 said that Mitt Romney won significantly on the issue they considered most important, which was the economy. He won on defense. He won on job creation. As a matter of fact, Mitt Romney, in exit polling after the 2012 election, won on virtually every single question that people asked, with one exception. And the one exception where Mitt lost by, I think it was something like 89% in favor of Obama, was, who do you think cares more about you? Romney won on the economy, defense, job creation, everything else. Who do you think cares more about you? Obama carried that with 89%, 80, 91%, something like that. And that's why they voted the way they did. Because Mitt Romney had been turned into a villain. And I'm up here to tell you about the power of story today, because if we don't understand the power of story, we're never going to win elections against these weenies and these losers and these, you know, kind of weaklings and kind of, you know, the kind of kids that were at the student council meetings always telling you, if you just vote for me, I'll give you a longer recess. You know, get out of my face. I don't need you people telling me what to do. We're going to keep losing to these weenies if we don't understand the power of story and if we don't understand the power of pop culture. Before Mitt Romney even got into the fight, he was the villain. And people don't vote for the villains. Best entrance of a villain I ever saw was in a movie called Star Wars. I saw it on the roof of a station wagon in 1977. You see this tiny little ship of Rebel Alliance and this giant, huge web of the Empire, this vast, enormous force fighting this tiny little group of individuals trying to escape. You get inside the spaceship, you see the individual rebel troopers, and they're actual humans with actual faces, and they're nervous and they're scared because they know they got a big fight coming. The hatch blows at the end there. Out come these white stormtroopers in these plastic outfits looking like living skeletons with masks that suggest actual skulls. Skeletons coming out of this red gaping hole, killing these individual people. And after a few moments of this, this 7.5 foot tall creature dressed in black with a black cape, with a Nazi helmet on, with a mask that looked like a living skull and breathing like some kind of artificial monster robot, steps out of the gates of hell. And I turned to the person sitting next to me and I said, I'll bet you that's the bad guy. I'll bet that's the bad guy. You will not vote for the villain. You won't. And Mitt Romney let himself be demonized and vilified. You can't unvilify yourself. All you can do is make the other guy a villain, too. If he had gone after his opponent and shown why he was a villain, then you'd have two villains, and then people would have their choice of which one of these two villains has the best policies. We would have won the election. But that didn't happen because we don't understand the power of story. We don't understand the power of what they did when they said that Mitt Romney is a vampire who causes cancer in his employees, who wants to put women in binders and ship their lady parts to China. By the time the debate started, he was already Darth Vader and the election was already over. If we don't understand the power of this, we're never going to win again. And I don't want to lose to these people. If we're going to lose the country, can't we at least lose it to people with machine guns and tanks or somebody you can respect, Nazis maybe, or communists? Do we have to lose the country to these jug-eared narcissist weenies just because they can tell a story and we can't? I'm not. No, not me. Not me. So. We have to understand the power of story, and we have to understand the power of how the left gets its message into people's hearts. They don't do it through websites. They don't do it through pamphlets or brochures. They don't do it through speeches. This is going to come as a shock to you, but the young people who vote for Barack Obama have never, ever, ever listened to a speech of Barack Obama. I assure you that this is the case. They've never listened to the State of the Union address, and if you ask them what his policies were, they couldn't tell you. They voted for Barack Obama because Jay-Z and Beyonce vote for Obama, and because George Clooney votes for Obama, and Lady Gaga votes for Obama, and everybody that they do like and admire votes for Obama, so that's why they vote for Obama. It's the power of the pop culture, and if you don't understand how powerful the pop culture actually is, I'm about to give you a short education. So, let's play a little game. Let's say that I was a political operative and I had the kind of control over your brain space so that if I could start a sentence, you could finish that sentence for me. If I knew you well enough so that I could start a sentence and you could finish it for me, I'd have you, right? I would have your heart and mind, and you do anything I damn well wanted you to. So, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it three times because we have three different age groups in here. So, we're going to do it three different times. Here's how we're going to start. I'm going to start a sentence. You're going to finish it for me. Here's the power of the pop culture. Are we ready? Look, up in the sky, it's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman. Exactly. Now, let's go a little bit younger. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip. Tropic port aboard this tiny ship. Right. Now we have a couple of young people in the back getting ready to make a hasty escape, and I don't blame them. That's where I'd be sitting if I was up here too. But this is for the four or five of you out there who are a little bit younger than the rest of us. I'm a young man in the conservative movement. I'm 55. I'm over half a century old. We got real problems here. Ready, young people? Here we go. This one's for you. It seems today that all you see is in movies and sex on TV. Okay, so what have we just done there? I've started the theme to the Superman TV show, I've started the theme to the Gilligan's Island TV show, and I've started the theme to the Family Guy TV show, and none of you had to go to a website, none of you had to read a program, and none of you had to go and look it up on the internet. You knew the end of those things because you had seen them hundreds, if not thousands of times. You had taken them into your brain in a way that you don't take in things when you read or when you get a pamphlet. The suspension of disbelief drops. There stands, George Reeves in a badly made suit, and he leaps through a building, and he's flying, and you believe it. And because you believe it, it goes into a deep part of your brain. We call this the willing suspension of disbelief. So, if you're one of those people that could finish, look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman, you could do that because Superman got into your heart. He got into your heart. You didn't even know it. You didn't even know that you knew it. And everything associated with Superman got into your heart as well. Because Superman is America. Superman was a positive view of America. Superman, as a point of fact, is a god who lives on Earth, who is unlimited in power and is only inhibited by his own moral decency. That's what America is, and his motto is, I stand for truth, justice, and the American way. The virtuous control of unlimited power when watch Superman. That's the political message that came with Superman. And if you can say, look up in the sky, it's a bird, a plane, it's Superman, everything about America that Superman represents is in your heart, and that's why you could finish that sentence.
And that is Bill Whittle, and he's got a very interesting message to deliver, and I think it's important that everybody understand. And I think it's especially important for the millennials and the younger generation, because I don't think that they totally get what it's all about. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're sharing some time with Bill Whittle today. We'll stop by for a break, and we'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, at CNN, CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
The War State by Michael Swanson is a must-read for anyone interested in the critical 20 years after World War II, when the United States morphed from a constitutional republic to a global imperial superpower. Get The War State by Michael Swanson from Amazon.com today.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we're spending some time with Mr. Bill Whittle. So let's get back to Mr. Bill Whittle and his message to his conservative message to the youth.
Now, I'm a little younger. I remember seeing Superman as a little boy, but I grew up in the time of Gilligan's Island. Now, Gilligan's Island's not a very political show. Frankly, about the only thing you can learn from Gilligan's Island is if you want to get off the island, all you really have to do is kill Gilligan. You'll be off next week. Really, just kill Gilligan, and your problems are over. You're rescued the very next week. So there's not a lot of political message in Gilligan's Island. However, there's a lot of political message in Family Guy. And for those young people out here who can finish the theme of Family Guy, know that all of the anti-capitalist message, the anti-American message, the anti-Christian message, the anti-conservative message that comes into that show every single week is as deep in their heads as Superman is in yours. We are paying people to put those messages into the minds of our kids, and they can recite this stuff in their sleep. They don't have to go to the Family Guy website to figure out what these messages are. It's in the bloodstream. So this is an example of the power of the pop culture, because the pop culture is not just a fish in the ocean. Controlling the pop culture is not just getting a big fish in the ocean. Controlling the pop culture is not just landing a whale in the ocean. The pop culture is the ocean. Every political issue that we face in the country today swims in the pop culture. It's everything. It's the air that we breathe, and we have to get into this battle space. And we have to get it in a way to win. We have to get into this space. We have to be able to control our messaging. Now, when I talk about messaging, I'm talking about the wrapper. I want to be crystal clear on this. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, about the conservative ideals and message that I would change. Not a dot or a comma. Not a dot or a comma. I think the Constitution is, I have a religious awe about that document, because not because of it, of its divine inspiration, which we can discuss, but because of the amount of work that went into it, the amount of work, the amount of study, and the amount of history, and the amount of constant debate, the work it took to produce that. So I'm not talking for a second about changing the message, but I am talking seriously about changing the package that we put that message in. Because the left is succeeding with the worst political message of all time. It's a message of collectivism and tyranny and dependency and envy and bitterness and hopelessness and entitlement and all of that stuff. But they're putting it in a Cartier diamond box, and we've got the most brilliant diamond message in the history of the world, and we're selling it in a greasy Kentucky Fried Chicken box, and we're wondering why nobody's buying it. Well, no one's buying it because we don't know how to sell it. And frankly, folks, if you're a politician on the right and you can't sell freedom to people, you're probably in the wrong line of work, honestly. How hard is it to sell freedom, virtue, and private property to people in this country. If you can't do that, you really need to find another line of work. So let's get down to the actual message, and then we'll talk about the packaging. And I know I make this joke every time, but on behalf of our C-SPAN viewers, Marco Rubio, God bless you. I don't know what I'd ever done without you. Seriously, it's thirsty work up here. He gave his career to make it safe for lecturers to drink in the middle of a speech. So what's the message? Well, what is it that we believe? What do we believe? We've got pamphlets, we've got brochures, we've got constitution things, we've got websites, we've got all kinds of things. What do we believe? The simpler it is, the better. As far as I'm concerned, a simple message is better than a hard one. You know, when Albert Einstein determined the relationship between matter and energy, the relationship between matter and energy could have filled 60 blackboards with equations. Could have been this astonishingly complex deal. But when he said, no, E equals MC squared, four operatives, he knew that he was on the truth because it was so simple, it had to be true. It was so beautifully simple, it had to be true. So what is it we're selling? What is the message of our conservative view of America? What is it? I think it's three things and three things only. This is what we need to sell, and then we'll talk about how to sell them. We need to sell freedom, we need to sell private property, and we need to sell virtue. So how do we do that to young people today? Well, the young people don't know anything about these terms. They've never been told anything about the founders, how all this stuff was worked out. They don't know anything about the Roman Empire and how it started as the Roman Republic. No, we got to start from scratch. So if we say freedom to young people, all they hear is freedom. Well, of course there's freedom. Everybody's free. The world is free. Everybody's free. We're all free. No. Freedom's a little bubble that's maintained by men and women who sign on the dotted line, put their lives at risk to keep that world of horror away from this little Disneyland of freedom that we live in, but they don't appreciate that. So when we talk about selling freedom to young people, we have to get down to the brass tacks that they understand. And really, when you get down to it, folks, if you want to sell freedom to young people, it's pretty simple. Freedom just means, do you want to be left alone? Or do you want to be told what to do? Which one? And if you go to a group of college students anywhere, including Berkeley or anywhere else, and you say to them, do you want to be left alone or do you want to be told what to do? They'll all say they want to be left alone. I can't remember where this was. It was either the University of Toronto or Oberlin. I'm pretty sure it was Oberlin, not positive. It very likely was Oberlin. Oberlin, for those of you who don't know, is Oberlin College, the most liberal college in America. Oberlin is where freedom and logic go to die. And I was in a room full of students at Oberlin, I think it was Oberlin, and arena seating, and reasonably full crowd. And I said, how many of you out there think you're socialists? And about 7 out of 10 raised their hands. About 7 out of 10. So I said to them, all right, well, you're socialist. I'm a capitalist. What is your core belief? What's your core tenet? What do you really believe in? Well, you asked them to define what they believed in as socialists, they couldn't tell you. And after a time, I kind of said, you know, it's not really my job to argue your position for you, but I'll do it anyway because I got a little time on my hands. Aren't you basically saying from each according to his ability to each according to his needs? Yes, that's socialism. So we'll come back to that in a second. So if you look at this group full of students in Oberlin, you say to these liberals, and we don't want to use that word anymore, these progressives, these collectivists at Oberlin or right over at Berkeley, and you just ask them, say, listen, put aside all the labels, put aside the R's and the D's, Republicans, Democrats, all that stuff, put it aside. Raise your hand if you want to be left alone. And they will. Now raise your hand if you want to tell people what to do. Raise your hand if you're the kind of person that likes to tell other people what to do. Now some of them do want to tell other people what to do, but none of them will raise their hands, not one of them. Not one of them. So if you want to be left alone, that means you value freedom. So which party is the party about being left alone? Well, who is it that's trying to tell you that you have to have a certain kind of health care that is only approved by a certain number of people? And who's telling you, no, there should be thousands of choices in health care? Which party is telling you that you have to wear a safety helmet when you take a shower? And the other one is saying, no, man, if you want to get out there and ride your bike out and go out there and do it, do it. Which party is talking about loud guns and fast cars and hot women? And which party is the party constantly trying to tell you, you have to have this kind of car, this is your temperature setting, this is what's going to happen, this is what you've got to do? Which party are the party of the weenies saying, no, no, you can't do that, you can't do that, can't do that, can't do that? And the other party's saying, hey man, you know, get out of my face, leave me alone. If you want to be left alone and you don't want to tell other people what to do, then don't you want the smallest government possible, because they're the only people that can wield guns? You know, if you don't like McDonald's, don't go to McDonald's. But if you don't like what the government's doing and you don't want to pay them their money, sooner or later people with guns will show up and they will take their money by force. So if you don't like being told what to do, wouldn't you be in favor of reducing to the smallest possible size the only thing out there that can actually force you into doing what you don't want to do? Yeah. Congratulations, you're a third of the way to being a conservative. Very simple. Do you want to be left alone? Yes, me too. Congratulations, we're on the same page. Now, private property is a little tougher sell because wealth has been demonized by the left because the left's entire reason for existence, the reason they obtain political power, is by saying to some people, vote for me and we'll use the power of the guns of the government to take stuff from those people and give it to you. So wealth has to be demonized, because if wealth is not demonized, if wealth is in fact a reward for hard work and more hard work, then taking that is stealing. And stealing's wrong. We don't want to be thieves, do we? No. So wealth has to be unearned, and it has to be demonized, and they have to take more than their fair share, which is what justifies stealing it from them and giving it to other people. So, it's a little tougher with the private property, but you can pull this off too, and here's how I did it. You have a group full of students who claim that they're socialists. 70% of them raise their hands and they're socialists. So I would say to them, okay, fair enough, socialists. What kind of phone do you have? I've got an iPhone 5, and I'm going to get the 6 as soon as my plan kicks in, get the upgrade. But I've got an iPhone 5. What do you guys have? And they'll tell you, you know, at first they look at you a little suspiciously, like, you know, well, what do you want to know about whatever? I said, I'm not going to steal them from you. I'm not a Democrat after all. I'm just curious. And they'll tell you. And I say, all right, those of you who are socialists, not the capitalists, just the socialists, bring those smartphones down. Why do you want our phones? Well, you are the ones who said, from each according to his ability to each according to his need, right? That's what you believe, right? I don't believe that, but you believe that. You're the socialist. So bring down the phones, because given the number of people here who identify as socialists, we bring these phones and we're going to have $2,000 worth of electronics down here. And we're going to put them in a little basket. And I'm not going to take them. Like I said, I'm not the government, and I'm not a collectivist. Together, we're going to take your cell phones, and when we're done, we're going to go to downtown Cleveland. We're going to find a pawn shop, and we're going to take these phones and we're going to liquidate them. We're going to sell them for $2,000. That's $120 bills, and then we're going to go through the streets of Cleveland and we're going to distribute that money to the poor, because we're going to take from each according to his ability and give to each according to his need. Bring them down. And
what do you think about that? Bring your iPhones up to the front of the room and let's disperse them. You are listening to Mr. Bill Whittle on Conservative Message to the Youth. And also, I want you to make sure that you check out the new Bubba Report. The new issue is coming out this week, and we want to make sure that you get it. All you have to do is go to thebubbashow.org. You can sign up for it. It's $99 a year. Make sure that you get your copy. You will not be disappointed. We've had glowing reviews on our first month, and this will be our second. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show with Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubba.org, and we're going to stop out of our break, and we'll be right back with more from Mr. Bill Whittle right after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we're spending some time with Mr. Bill Whittle, so let's get back to Mr. Whittle right now.
Guess what? They don't bring them down. You know why? It's because they're not socialists, that's why. It's because they're rock-ribbed William F. Buckley conservatives who believe in this idea of wealth redistribution so long as it's somebody else's wealth being redistributed to them, but when it's time for them to take their wealth and redistribute it to other people, all of a sudden they think Ronald Reagan is a swell guy. And that is where you can put people in a position where they have to put their money where their mouth is. Of course they're in favor of wealth redistribution. You're college students. You don't have any wealth to redistribute. You want other people to give you stuff, and you will until you start getting jobs and start paying taxes, at which point your opinion will change. And that's normal. This is, in fact, my phone. It's mine. I don't owe this phone to anybody. You know why I have this phone? I have this phone because I work like a slave is why. I get up every day. I work 7 days a week. I work very, very hard. And this is one of the benefits of the extra work that I do that I don't have to do. I earned it. It's mine. It's my phone. Mine. And those phones are yours. Well, technically, they're your parents, but we're not going to split hairs. But you can actually call them on it. You can make them, you can put them on their moral code. Make them live up to their own moral code. I will say to some of these students, they'll say, well, you know, wealth and this and so on and forth. I'll say, listen, you have an Xbox, right? You have an Xbox, you have a PlayStation, you got something, right? I know gamers when I've seen gamers. I'm a gamer, too. I know you're out there playing Call of Duty. I know you're playing all these games. So you just let's just remember one thing here. The poorest Americans are richer than 93% of the rest of the population of the earth. That toy that you go home to every night, if you were to take that toy to the pawn shop and sell that toy, you could probably feed a village in Africa for a year. And you don't. You don't. You say you would, but you don't. None of you do. You're all hypocrites. It's your property. You want it. You want to keep it. You feel like you've earned it. You probably have. But you could take that Xbox and sell it for $300, ship that money over to Africa, and feed a family certainly for a year. And you don't. Because you're not socialists. Because you understand that these things are products of the life that you lead, and your willingness to be charitable is not determined by whether or not somebody has a gun to your head. That's not charity. You can get people, young people, to understand the value of private property when you ask them if they're going to be willing to sell any of theirs in order to live up to their valuable, incredibly advanced moral superiority. And the answer is they won't do it because they're not socialists. They're regular people, just like us, who feel that if they work hard, they should be entitled to a reward for that work. Pretty simple, really. Third thing you need to sell, and the last thing you need to sell, is virtue. Now, you say virtue to young people, and they think that that means not having sex till you're, you know, 70. But that's not what virtue means. Virtue is very simple. Virtue is very simple. Virtue just means don't be a jerk. When I'm talking to college kids, I say don't be a dick. It's the same basic thing. Don't be a jerk, okay? Don't be a jerk. That's all virtue is. It is don't be a jerk. Do you think, raise your hands out there, college students of America, raise your hands if you think you have the right to hit somebody or the right to take what's in their backpack right now. Do you have the right to take what's in that person's backpack, yes or no? No, of course not. I agree. You'd be kind of a jerk if you hit them and or took their stuff. So if you don't believe in hurting people and hitting people, and you don't believe in taking their stuff, then that means that you're virtuous. And the cool thing about that is, if you're virtuous, then we can leave you alone. Remember how you said you wanted to be left alone? Swell. If you're not a jerk, we can leave you alone. Because if you behave without hitting people and taking their stuff, we can let you do whatever you want to do, limited only by the point where you start to hurt people or take their stuff. If you're not a jerk, we can leave you alone. However, if you are a jerk, and you do want to steal from people and take their stuff or hurt them, now all of a sudden we need policemen and we need cameras and we need parole officers, we need wardens, we need prison guards, we need the whole thing that is necessary to stop some of you from being jerks. And I don't know why the rest of us all have to pay that penalty because some of you are jerks. I think we ought to deal with those of you that are jerks and leave the rest of us alone. That's what I think. And that's virtue. And congratulations, you're three-thirds of the way. You're all the way there. You are, in fact, a rock-rib conservative because you have understood that these principles are not the principles of hatred or selfishness or anything. They're simple, common-sense, freaking core values that we all share. Everybody wants to be left alone. Everybody wants the rewards of their stuff. And everybody agrees that it's wrong to hurt somebody and to take their stuff. Pretty simple. So if you have these three simple things, just a couple of simple things, how do you actually sell this stuff? Well, I had a really remarkable epiphany about this just a few months ago. I was down in Florida, and I fly from LAX to Fort Lauderdale, and every single time I go Virgin America. I'll fly Virgin America. I'll fly Virgin America towns I'm not even going to. That's how much I like Virgin America. So there's a point to this, so stay with me here. First time I flew on a Virgin America flight, I walked into that, it was a red eye. I walked into that airplane at 11 o'clock at night at LAX, and I walked into a room that was dark, and the lighting on the airplane was purple and red, and the seats were white plastic and black leather, and the music they were playing was the kind of jazz that you only hear in the coolest clubs I've ever been in. And I said, this isn't an airplane, this is a freaking nightclub. This kicks butt. I couldn't believe how cool it was. And about a year ago, a little over a year ago, Virgin America did something that I really seriously would like you all to go home and watch when you get a chance. About a year and a half ago, Virgin America, which used to have a very funny, extremely funny animated safety video, spent, I think it must have been millions of dollars, to do a new airplane safety video. So if you get a chance, go home, look up YouTube, go Virgin America safety video. It's been seen by 11 million people. And I probably put about 40,000 of those hits on myself. I'd get off a Virgin America flight having watched the safety video in my chair, gotten in my car at LAX, driven home, fed the cats, gotten my headsets on, gone to YouTube because I wanted to hear it again. That's how good it is. And it is that good because the music is that good, the dancers are that hot, the movement is so sexy, it's so interesting, it's so cool, couldn't get enough of it. And it was only after about the time I came back and saw it for about the eighth or ninth time, I realized, hang on, I just got off the plane, I'm sitting here watching this, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I wanted to see it before I go to sleep, why am I doing this? I'm doing it because it's so entertaining, it's so well done, that I am willing to spend 4.5 minutes to hear the most boring information on the face of the earth. Here's how you operate a seatbelt. Here's how you blow up your emergency vest. Here's how you don't tamper with the smoke detectors in the bathroom. Here's how you find the exit doors. It's not only the most boring information in the world, it's the most boring information in the world, and I've heard it 200 times, and totally blanked it out on every flight I've ever been on, but I couldn't get enough of it. And I couldn't get enough of it because it was magnificently choreographed. It was beautifully danced. Each one of these little beats was unique. They had these robot dancers. They had these gorgeous girls. They had a tremendous kicking soundtrack. It was absolutely fantastic. And I realized, if this video can make me watch the most boring information in the world for the 20th time, after hearing it 300 times commercially and 11 million people on YouTube have watched this safety video, then this is important. It's important. And I'm going to show you why. We need to reimagine our values for young people. Not reinvent them, not change them, reimagine them. There's a great example that I can give you for this. When you talk to young Americans about George Washington, young millennials who've never been told anything about the history of George Washington, know anything about him other than he owned slaves, that's about all they know about George Washington.
And we'll come back with Bill Whittle tomorrow because I think he's got a good message to send. And I think it's important that we listen, but even if you don't like it, I think it's interesting and exciting. This has been The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And again, make sure you check out thebubbashow.org and check out for our latest Bubba Report. You can sign up for it right on the website. It is $99 a year. You get a minimum of 12 issues, and they will either be emailed or posted to the website where you get them. But for today, this has been The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same station, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.